Good evening. You're listening to A Question of Balance on 2SER 107.3 FM. And I'm Ruby Vincent. The weather's becoming rather nice here in Sydney, and I'm doing a whole lot of big cleaning. Comes to A Question of Balance, I've got some long running sagas that really need putting together in shorter coverage. And who better to contribute to this than Nicholas Carlisle, who's a principal scientist with the New South Wales Office of Environment and Heritage and one of our longest running guests and certainly our seabird expert. Thank you for joining us again, Nicholas.
It's a pleasure, Ruby.
Well, I always find it a pleasure talking to you, although I must admit a lot of your stories are less than happy.
Oh, well, I think I've got something a little bit more positive to talk about today.
Well, which of your sagas are you going to tidy up for us today?
Well, one that's been hanging around for a long time, and in fact, it's been a festering problem for 100 years, so that's a legendary saga if ever there was, is the rodents on Lord Howe Island. For your listeners, Lord Howe's about 500 kilometres off Port Macquarie out in the Tasman Sea, and it's been floating around out there for about 6 million years, originally of volcanic origin. Humans actually didn't discover it until they were establishing the penal colony in Sydney Harbour, and James Cook in his wanderings had found a fantastic island a little further out into the Tasman and the South Pacific, Norfolk Island, to set up a garden for Sydney Cove. So they knew that Norfolk had no ground mammals on it that would destroy crops, and so they went to Sydney Cove and offloaded most of the people and most of the ships, and then they took a couple of ships and sailing out to Norfolk Island. If you draw a line from where Sydney is to Norfolk, almost bang slap in the middle is Lord Howe Island. And so their arrival there in May of 1788 was in fact the first time humans had ever been there. But they didn't bring rats. They just filled their ship with turtles and birds that were naive and very pieces and refilled their casks with fresh water and off they went. But it brought the islands into human consciousness that here was a place like Eden, and indeed it remained like that for quite some time.
Yeah, I seem to recall from one of your stories it was quite accidental that the rats ended up there.
Yes, indeed it was. And in fact, the first rodent to arrive was house mice. And I think around 1869 it was first reported. Probably came in foodstuffs. But the real terror, the ship rat, Rattus rattus, arrived through a vessel that had struck a rock. A boat called the Macabo, which was transferring stores from Sydney to Lord Howe. And it hit a rock on the Admiralty Islands, which are just to the northeast of the main island. And so they ran it ashore at a place called Ned's Beach, and indeed it didn't sink. They got it ashore and offloaded all the things, but unbeknownst to them, they also rats also arrived. In fact, I read something recently that there was a piano that came ashore as part of the stuff that was being offloaded, and inside the back of the piano was a rat nest. So whether that was all part of a cushy landing for rats, I'm not sure.
Part of their problem, I think, was they ended up destroying the giant plasmid.
Yeah, look, rats are amazing. We know a little bit about how they spread when they get into new territory, because there has been so many invasions of islands by rats, and particularly Rattus rattus, because each species does act a little bit differently. But Rattus rattus can spread within about 2 to 3 years. They'll probably over the entire island, because being a subtropical to tropical environment, the conditions were quite benign. There were plenty of food, and the rats just continue to breed while the conditions are good. So there were a whole swag of invertebrates that suffered really badly, and then certainly the Lord Howe phasmid, the giant insect that had called Lord Howe home for many millions of years, and in fact originally a flighted animal, had lost its ability to fly. And so it was a tasty meal. It and a whole bunch of other things really went to the wall very quickly. And only those have managed to hold on are either particularly tough in their exterior to stop the rodents tearing them apart, or fortunate enough were also on some of the offshore islands and so have survived to this current day.
Just a little snippet. Oh, I heard this recently from another guest, that there are some areas over, I think of England, where the black rat is now in such a decline that they have to be protected, otherwise they're going to be just wiped off the face of the earth in that region, which is very sad, actually.
It's always the case. We have a wallaby, the brush-tailed rock wallaby, and also the palmer wallaby, both of which survived overseas on islands, and some of them have even been brought back to help augment our declining populations here. So it does go both ways, but the black rat is not a friend anywhere else outside of Europe, that's for sure.
Let's get back to Lord Howe.
Yeah, Lord Howe had a particularly difficult time because they've had a number of industries over the years. One was onions very early on in the 1860s until they got a blight, and then they had lemons and various other things until disease sort of wiped them out because they were looking for products that they could sell back to the Australian mainland and actually have an income out there. This was until tourism really kicked off in the 1930s. That in itself has been hampered because of rodents being on the island. You can't have banquets laid out with buffets at night because the rats are into them, because they're just ubiquitous across the island, and the islanders spend a fair bit of time and money ensuring low numbers around the lodges and within the settlement, and indeed in some of the more precarious native areas as well, where we have limited breeding of native plants that are endangered on the island. So the issue with the rats is they multiplied quickly. They had a palm industry. They were selling palms to Europe, and the palm seed was getting smashed by the rats. And so originally there was a bounty on their tails. And so they were hoping that people with little ratting dogs, you know, terriers and that, would get out and reduce the rats. They introduced owls a number of times over a number of years. There was a native bubuk owl, a little ninox owl on the island, but it wasn't making a decent headway in the rats. And so they thought they needed a much bigger, tougher owl. They ended up establishing in the 1930s a hybrid version of the masked owl, which is in fact made up of the threatened masked owl from the Australian mainland and the Tasmanian form. And now there's a hybrid masked owl out there, which does eat the rats and mice, but obviously not in the numbers to control them. So they did a huge amount of things to try and bring them under control, but never to eradicate them, because up until about 30 years ago, that wasn't in anybody's wildest dreams. The difficulty of terrain.
Antenna Documentary Film Festival is back for its 7th year, bringing you the best in documentary cinema from Australia and around the world. With over 50 documentaries, Q&As and special events, the festival's diverse program will transform and expand your world. Antenna opens on Tuesday, October 10 and runs until Sunday, October 15. Doco lovers, get your tickets now at antennafestival.org. 2SER is a media partner of the Antenna Film Festival.
You can eradicate rats fairly easily, even using commercial poisons, on fairly level islands. But when you start introducing high cliffs, and on Lord Howe they get up to 600 metre drops, vertical drops, the rats can get out on those cliffs, and there's no way, you know, in a normal baiting program that you could cover those areas to make sure you've got every single rat. So they started doing serious rat control in the 1970s into the 1980s, when they realised the palm industry was really suffering from the fruit being eaten, which obviously contained the seed that they were after, but also in really stress periods, the actual palms themselves were being eaten. The Kentia palms had the stipes, which is the stem of the leaf, being chewed out by rats just for the sugary carbohydrate in the centre of the stem. And so palm stands themselves were in decline if they didn't actually do something about managing the rats.
And along came...
Well, along came a program that I was involved with from the early 2001-2002, when we realised that I'd been already working with seabirds on Lord Howe for a number of years, and there's a whole swag of them that only breed on the outer islands where there are no rodents. And it was decided that really it was time that something was done to try and eradicate rodents from Lord Howe. Not just for the seabirds, not just for the invertebrates. There's a whole lot of bush birds. I think 9 species are extinct on Lord Howe, and most of those because of the introduction of a black rat. And so it was really beholden on New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife at the time, now Office of Environment and Heritage, to come up with a decent plan to actually allow for the eradication. Now, Lord Howe in itself is a very particular case. It has the 350 people that live on the island, and it has about 20,000 to 25,000 visitors a year. And the island's economy almost solely relies on that level of tourism. And so we had to come up with a plan for eradicating rodents that wasn't going to disrupt the tourism industry, that wasn't going to impact humans and human health, but would actually allow us to totally eradicate them from an island of 1,400 hectares with two large mountains on it.
Yes, I think I recall over the years that you talked to a question of balance, that it was sort of like the white hats and the black hats. There were some people who were in favour of the eradication for reasons, and the others who were dead set against it, in part because they feared for the safety of their own native birds.
That's exactly right. Nobody on Lord Howe wants rats there. I mean, that's the bottom line. The argument over time has been the method that would be used to eradicate them. And the method that we have been using is one, in fact, it was pioneered by the New Zealanders almost 30 years ago, and they've perfected it, having eradicated rodents in general from more than 300 islands. And in fact, in New South Wales, we've done it on six of our islands using a variety of techniques, but always the same poison, a second generation anticoagulant called Bradyficum, which you would find in off-the-shelf products like Talon or Ratsack One Shot. Because rats are very clever, they would certainly be adverse to eating a bait that caused sickness straight away. So if a rat had eaten a bait and then started feeling sick, it's like the other rats around it would smell the food on its breath or something, realise that it's not well, and then avoid that food. And so a second generation anticoagulant obviously gives you an idea of how they die by the inability to stop internal bleeding. It's relatively quick. It takes about 24 hours all up, and they don't actually show much sign of an issue until the last few hours when they actually become non-responding. They also get thirsty, and so they seek out water because they're bleeding out. But the actual poison takes about 6 days to have an effect. And so in that way, if you're a rat, you and all your other mates around you have a full belly of poison before you even realise you're going to get sick. And so it's a clever poison in that way. And it's also less toxic to birds, although it can be in high doses toxic to birds. And it doesn't impact other biological systems like invertebrates. It's non-soluble in water, and so it can't dissolve into our waterways and affect fish or eel or anything like that if they don't consume the bait directly. And it's a fairly hard pellet that breaks down fairly quickly. So it's a poison that's been used for many years. There's been lots of toxicology studies, lots of studies looking at the different pathways that it breaks down and ensuring its safety. And really, that's been the crux of how long it's taken us to get to the point where we are now, which is, in fact, the Lord Howe Island Board only in early September agreed to allow the eradication to go ahead using Bradyficum in the winter of 2018, because we now have all of the licenses and certificates from state and federal authorities, from health, pest management, from the environment departments, and everybody's in agreement that the process we're using and how we're going to approach this eradication meets all best practices, and that we are safeguarding everything that we possibly can before we carry out the eradication.
In the House Cult Film Classics returns to Event Cinemas George Street, October 13th. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll hurl. There's only one world and one party in Wayne's World.
No stairway. Denied.
Hosted by Sevens, Jabba and Quinny from Supernova. Check the full In the House program and grab tickets at eventcinemas.com.au. Event Cinemas George Street, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
Sorts of numbers of rats do you think you'll be dealing with?
That's a very good question, and you could guesstimate it. There has been several attempts. It could be 50,000, it could be 10,000, it could be 100,000. It depends on how big the summer is leading into it, so how much fruiting occurs, how well they breed, because we're planning to bait for rats and mice in winter when food resources are normally quite poor. Because what you need to do is not only get your poison to every point of the island, and certainly with mice being smaller than rats, they can have a home range from as little as 10 square metres. And so you're having to get enough pellets within those 10 square metres to allow every animal to get a fatal dose. And we've done studies on the toxicology of the bait in terms of how it affects rats and mice from Lord Howe, because the people on the island have been trying to keep the rodents out of their houses for decades, and certainly Bredificum products have figured very high on their shopping list of stuff to maintain rat-free areas around their houses and within their houses. So there was an issue of, will they have developed, you know, some sort of resistance or tolerance? We do know that mice are more tolerant to Bredificum than rats anyway. And so we actually carried out some studies at the beginning of 2016. We'd also carried them out in 2013 originally, looking at catching wild rats and mice on Lord Howe and in a controlled environment, feeding them particular levels of the poison, ensuring that it was actually going to kill them. And mice held out a lot longer than the rats, but the rats died within 6 days, we expected, although mice required a much larger consumption of bait than had been originally predicted, but they died within about 21 days.
Sad sort of topic.
Well, the saddest part of the topic is the mass destruction they're causing on Lord Howe. And we've just carried out studies on black-winged petrels, which are similar to Gould's petrel that I've talked about on your program before, and on little shearwaters, which are a very different species. Shearwaters are a winter breeder and the black-winged petrels are a summer breeder. And we carried out studies over the last couple of years which showed that the little shearwaters were losing about a third of their chicks that they were trying to raise to rats. Rats were going into the nests and pulling these chicks, which were larger than them, out and killing them. And then the black-winged petrels had it even harder, because they're an interesting group of birds, the pterodromas, and I know from having worked on them that when they're incubating their eggs, the adults go into almost this torpor. And in fact, as a human, you can pull them out of the nest when they're incubating, put them in a bag, weigh them, and then gently get them back into the nest, and they barely wake up because they're sitting on an egg for, you know, up to 10 days, and so they're trying to conserve their energy. But on Lord Howe, they're sitting on an egg, and rats are going down and taking eggs out from underneath the nesting bird and then pulling it out of the burrow, and it takes the bird about half an hour to sort of wake up to the fact that it no longer has an egg. And we've got footage of them coming out of their burrow screaming, going, "Where's my egg? Where's my egg?" You know, they're most distressed. And of course, if the black-winged petrels aren't breeding where they're carrying out current baiting on the island to manage the rats in palm stands, they lose all their chicks. So all of them die. So just two very good examples of large vertebrates on the island, which are only just hanging on simply because of the baiting that's occurring.
No, I fully understand what's going on. It's just that, once again, it's animals, in other words, the rodents, that ended up there because of our activities a long time ago.
Yes, it is sad, and I must admit, I'm a long-term vegetarian of many decades. I don't believe in killing anything, but in my work, I believe taking on some sort of karmic load of restoring the natural environments that I work in to a pre-European state, and that often involves killing animals. But I don't like doing it, but if it means doing it once and doing it properly and never again, and then the other animals which have a little bit more right to that location than the rodents that were introduced there, then I'm willing to take that on to see those natural environments flourish again.
I've no problem with animals eating other animals and even humans eating them. But I just think that the rats and mice didn't go there of their own accord. They ended up there because of us, because of humans. That's really it. And then we turn around and are responsible, because we took so long to do anything about it, for having to kill many thousands of them.
That's right. And it is a tough one too, because just in terms of the biodiversity on Lord Howe, there are some environments there we now know are being held in place because someone goes to the top of the mountain and lays bait every 6 weeks to keep the rodent numbers down low enough to allow plants to germinate. There are some species of plants that are only surviving because of that baiting program. So it's really tenuous on Lord Howe. I mean, they've lost so much to these rodents, and we can barely scratch the surface as to what's happened. But the king hit needs to happen if that very special environment, which is, well, you know, which has lasted 6 million years, is able to somehow redress some of the dysfunction that it's had for more than 100 years.
2SER is a grassroots, independent, not-for-profit community radio station. We've always stood for social equality and justice and played the most diverse range of kick-ass music. But producing great radio doesn't come cheap. That's why we're asking you to dig in your pocket to show 2SER your support from the 6th to the 20th of October. You can even do it now. Just go to 2SER.com and click on Donate to keep the stories, ideas and music flowing.
What's the estimates of the success?
We've had very high successes in temperate areas. And in fact, Macquarie Island was a wonderful example of a temperate to cool temperate environment, a few thousand k's off Tasmania, a massive island, 32 kilometres long, where they got rid of rats and mice and rabbits in one eradication in 2011-2012. And on Lord Howe, because it's a temperate to subtropical environment, there is a little bit of concern because we have had, over the last decade, five failures on tropical islands, and the biggest problem has been either a poor estimate of the amount of food that was available during what was supposed to be a low food period, because obviously in a tropical environment there's less difference between summer and winter, i.e. high food periods and low food periods. And the other issue has been not being able to get to every single location on an island to make sure that the bait is spread. And so they're the two reasons they've had failures in tropical environments. But we've certainly done enough studies on Lord Howe and looked at the best practice on very difficult terrain islands such as Macquarie Island and Campbell Island. In fact, that the New Zealanders did 11,000 hectare island in the subantarctic with 600 metre cliffs on it, that they managed to get the bait to everywhere. So we know we've got the techniques for getting the bait to every single location. We're going to be ground baiting and hand baiting within about a quarter of the island where the settlement areas are. So every subfloor, every roof cavity, every shed is all going to be baited to make sure that we've got to every location. And in fact, in the last 12 months, they've done a massive cleanup on the island and removed, I think it's 100 ton or something close to it, of rubbish from the island to remove harbour, you know, places where the rodents can hang out, which would be hard to get bait into in a lead up to this. It also cleaned the island up wonderfully and allowed the locals a free, you know, tip run of car bodies and building materials and all sorts of stuff that went off the island. And they just, over the last 12 months, they've backfilled the ship, which brings out stores with huge containers full of rubbish, and it's all gone off the island to be recycled on the mainland and to make a much better environment to attempt to bait.
Now, you're going to do it next winter.
Yes.
Are you allowed to repeat it? How many years do you have permission to keep the follow-up going?
Well, the thing is with eradications is they have to happen quickly, and they have to happen in particular windows because you don't want rebreeding to occur. It will take us from the, if we get to bait on the 1st of June, by the 22nd of June, there'll be no rodents left on the island. It happens very quickly. Now, it's something that to actually eradicate them, once you've got the logistics worked out, it is very complex, but in essence, it's quite simple. The difficult thing is to prove the rodents are gone. And so it's going to take us 2 years of monitoring to make sure we did get it right. But it's not just us walking around checking. We actually have two biosecurity dogs that are now trained to sniff out rodents. They're not only going to be used to check particularly the settlement to make sure it's rodent-free, because that's going to be the most difficult location to ensure that we've got it right, simply because we have 350 people living there and things change on a daily basis on the island, and there are houses being built and businesses carrying on and all sorts of stuff. So not only are those dogs used for that, but for any shipment that comes to the island from here on in will be checked for rodents. Every bag that comes from an aircraft will be checked for rodents. And so the cost of the program is around $9 million. And so you're not going to let your biosecurity slip once you've put all that effort in. So while there is a possibility, there is a leeway within our license that we could go and bait in a year's time, we have confidence in the system that at least in the first couple of months, we will have the baiting completed. Because obviously, one of the things we can't control is the weather. So I say it's on the 1st of June next year. But if we have heavy rain forecast sometime within a week to 10 days of the baiting planned, we will hold off until that rain's gone, simply because we don't want to have more than 40 millimetres of rain falling on these baits before the rodents get to it. Bearing in mind that the rats can eat all the baits they need to within 6 days, and certainly the mice can consume the amount of bait they need to within 5 or 6 days, but take 21 days to die. But the problem is with your bait, you put it out and the most aggressive animals are going to stockpile it, and that's the rats. So we have one baiting done, and then about somewhere between 14 and 21 days later, we do a second baiting. And so the first baiting knocks out all your aggressive animals, mostly the rats, and perhaps even some dominant mice. And then the second baiting cleans up those that may not have got bait after the first one.
Interesting the way they think ahead. Look, I think having to check re-entry from boats and planes and all the rest of it is going to be a real problem, because I know with the cane toads that they so successfully eliminated from those sites at Tarrant Point in Sydney, they got rid of them, but they're always having to look in the containers that come down from Queensland and the plants that are brought down, and it's an ongoing problem.
We're a bit lucky in some ways with Lord Howe, because it is 3 days shipping from the Australian mainland out to Lord Howe, and because of work health and safety, you don't get rodents on commercial vessels very often these days, because they're just not tolerated for occupational health and safety reasons. You don't get rodents in airports particularly, or in baggage areas, simply because of the way that we manage our environments. And in some ways also, it's very different to New Zealand. New Zealand has amazing biosecurity once they clear islands to ensure they don't get reinfested. And the problem for them is that they don't have any native rodents on the main island, except perhaps the Pacific rat, the Kiori. And because of that, the number of rats, of introduced rats and mice in New Zealand are much, much in much higher densities than what we have here in Australia, because we have all these predators that eat rodents, and we have native rodents. As you know, the native bush rat can outcompete the black rat. And so it's a very different situation here on the Australian mainland, getting stuff across the Lord Howe. But be that as it may, we're not going to take those risks, and biosecurity will just become part of it. And in fact, these dogs aren't just for rats and mice. They want to stop amphibian getting out. We've already had a bleating tree frog managed to establish there, and a garden skink in the 1990s. They don't want any more of those. They've done an eradication of big-headed ants, and these dogs are trained to sniff out big-headed ants, which are an invasive ant. They're even trained them to sniff out myrtle rust, which is a problem certainly in Australian mainland. It's actually just started to develop on Norfolk Island.
What do you do when your job is taken by a robot? Where does all your e-waste go? How do you split your digital assets when you break up with your partner? This is Think Digital Futures. Each week, an exploration of the moral and mind-boggling questions that face us in the digital age. Tune in Sunday mornings at 10:30 and Tuesday evening at 6:30. You can also listen on your favourite podcast app. Just search for Think Digital Futures.
Now, something we haven't mentioned at all is cats. Are cats not permitted on Lord Howe?
They haven't been permitted since the 1970s, and the last cat died out a good half dozen years ago. No, they decided, because of the woodhen, which is one of two native species that we're going to bring into captivity, because they will directly eat the bait. We know that from a trial baiting we did in 2007, where we trialled 1.5 tonnes of a non-toxic version of the bait. We spread it by helicopter in a couple of areas, and it was my job to monitor all of the vertebrates on the island following that to see which took the bait. And the reason we could, well, this non-toxic version, and the reason we could tell, we had a fluorescing marker in the bait, so if they swallowed the bait, it would turn, we could just literally get their feces, their poo, put it under a black light, and it would fluoresce with the marker that was in the bait. And so we know that the woodhen take the bait, and we have to bring all them into captivity, which is something that we will always do in that situation. But the woodhen themselves, because of cats, got down to very low numbers in the 1970s. On one mountain, there are only 16 birds left. And there are now, with getting rid of the pigs on the island, which were the main issue, and the cats, they now have about 250 to 300.
It is beginning to sound like paradise. No cats, no pigs, no rats.
Yeah, they eradicated goats there in 1999, so there are no goats. The last feral animals are actually rats and mice.
Well, I really am so looking forward to this. It's on my list of goodies for next year, together with the electrical promise that I will build my battery in 100 days. if that one could come off too, I think 2018 could be a wonderful year.
Sounds good to me. I'm really looking forward to it.
That is Nicholas Carlisle, who's a principal scientist with Conservation Science Team and in the Office of the Environment and Heritage in New South Wales. Stories and sound files for today's program are on the ACOB website, www.aqob.com.au. Well, we'll be back next week at the same time. Until then, please take care of the environment. Bye-bye.